welcome to another episode of Side by Side ATC Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Haynes, here to talk to you a little bit about some tales from the tower. Yes, I spent my first 9 years in the FAA working at towers. Spent about 5 years in Brownsville, Texas, and then about 4 years at Dallas Love Tower. And I thoroughly enjoyed my time in the tower, so much so that I am back working in a tower. I have been retired. It will be 10 years this January that I have been retired from the FAA. And it will be 3 years in April that I have been back working at a tower in the Federal Contract Tower Program. And so I'm in the Dallas area right now. And it's a joy to be back in the tower. Being in the tower is definitely different from being in the center. I enjoyed my time in the towers. I enjoyed my time working in center. I thoroughly enjoyed my time as an instructor at the academy and at Advanced ATC. So that is pretty much my history. So today, just some stories from the tower, some questions that have been asked by students at the academy for the most part. One of the main questions I got is, which was better, working in the tower or working in center? And invariably, my question was always, yes, they were both equally good. And they, of course, were not perfect jobs, neither one of them. But I thoroughly enjoyed my time working both in the tower and in the center. So today, we're going to talk about some of the things that happen when you're working in a tower. And it all began when I was still at the academy. And I called down to Brownsville to talk to, hopefully talk to manager, but ended up talking to some of the controllers. And they told me that they had recently had a pilot that was trying to land at an airport nearby and had actually landed in a tree instead. And I was like, okay, what have I gotten myself into? And then I ended up going down to Brownsville shortly thereafter. And it was, number one, it was a totally different setting than what I was used to. I had grown up in the Oklahoma City and Dallas areas mainly. Went to college in Jackson, Mississippi, and ended up back in the Dallas area, and then going to, of all places, Brownsville, Texas. And Brownsville was interesting because we did have a customs office at the airport that was, as far as I know, it was always staffed. And we had lots of airplanes come through and clear customs on their way north and clear customs on their way south. We had quite a few of foreign pilots, quite a few Hispanic pilots, pilots that were flying up from Mexico. It was very interesting for someone who had not been around much of the Hispanic accent, trying to get used to listening to it and understanding what they were trying to say. And one of the stories that I'll tell you is I had a couple of airplanes coming in from across the border. And the first one gives me his call sign, his story, you know, and he goes into a long story. He says, this is X-ray Bravo, and whatever the call sign was. And I have Maria, my wife, is in the right seat, and we have, you know, and he lists all his kids, he lists all the animals that he has with him and everything else. And this is all great. Doesn't really bother me, except that I didn't get the call sign. And the phraseology is, say again. You know, the problem is you don't want to say that, because he will do exactly that. He will say it all again. And so I said, okay, the aircraft with Maria in the right seat in her right base for runway 13 cleared to land. And he goes, Royer. Okay, we got that done. And then another plane comes over from Matamoros, and he does the same thing. And I still was not fast enough to catch the call sign. I caught everything else. He had, we'll say, Conchita, or, you know, whatever his wife's name was, in the right seat. And, you know, the story of everything that was in the airplane with him. And so I said, okay, the aircraft with, we'll say, Conchita in the right seat, you're following the Cessna with Maria in the right seat for runway 13, number 2, cleared to land. And he doesn't even hesitate. He just goes, Roger. And like he knew who was flying in front of him. And but, you know, at that point, I understand that I've got to keep quite the eye on these two just to make sure nothing happens. And sure enough, nothing happens. So just one of the stories. My busiest hours, and still the busiest hours that I've ever worked in a tower, were in Brownsville. Two consecutive hours of 102 operations an hour. And that sounds like a lot. Like I said, I've been busy in towers lots of times. I have not had 102 operations in an hour. The thing about these 102 operations is it was three airplanes only for the entire 2 hours. It was three Navy Kingers that were doing touch and goes. And so all I had to say was, you know, Navy 4 Golf so-and-so, runway 13 cleared touch and go. Navy 4 Golf so-and-so, number 2, runway 13 cleared touch and go. Navy 4 Golf so-and-so, you're number 3, runway 13 clear for the option. For 2 hours, that's what I said. Every once in a while, one of the Kingers would get a little close, and so I wouldn't have my separation on the runway, so I'd have to tell them to go around. So 2 hours of that for 200 operations. Now that you hear the story, you don't think that I was that busy. And I wasn't. I wasn't busy for those 2 hours. The numbers say I was, but I was not. I've had much busier hours and much more difficult times in the tower with much fewer numbers. There are times when 30 in 1 hour can be incredibly difficult to work. And there are times when 102 is incredibly easy to work. So numbers don't really matter. What matters is number of airplanes you have and whether or not they're all listening to you and doing what you tell them to do. The thing with pilots, especially ones at small airports, is they will try to help you. They will try and try and try to help you. But you have a plan, and they don't know what your plan is. And so in trying to help, sometimes they don't really help. So that's my second story. I think on one of the previous podcasts, I told you about my practical jokes. We had a ceiling fan in the tower cab. It had an on-off switch, and it had a speed switch. So I was alone one night and bored, which is a bad combination for a controller. And I proceeded to find a pad of paper and a hole punch, and I punched a bunch of holes out of that paper. And I had a nice mound of holes by the time I was through. So I turned the ceiling fan off, turned the speed up to high, got up on one of the chairs and put all the paper holes on the ceiling fan blades. And so and went home. And the next day, to my chagrin, the hub manager from Corpus Christi came down. And I was like, I have already ticked this guy off. This is not going to be good. So no one actually turned the ceiling fan on that day while he was there, which for South Texas was a miracle for me. So he never knew about it. The next morning after that, though, one of the guys that I had gone through the academy with, and we had both gone down to Brownsville at the same time, he was opening up, and so he got in the elevator, went up the stairs, got into the tower cab. First thing he did was hit the on switch, and poof. He told me the next day that it looked like he was right in the middle of a snow globe. And I couldn't help but laugh. Still one of the best practical jokes I've ever come up with. Let's see what else we have. There was a time at Brownsville where we were so overstaffed. We had 11 controllers, and not enough traffic or anything else for 11 controllers. And so I had lots of free time, and I liked to play golf, and I got back into playing golf when I was in South Texas. And so I would use a lot of my break time to go out. We had some grass right by the tower. It was probably about, 30 yards by 40 yards, something like that, maybe 30 by 60. And so I could go out and work on my short game and stuff like that. And my short game got pretty good while I was there. And then I also kind of like to doodle and draw a little bit. And I've always been fascinated with drawing golf courses. So I finally got the idea to design a wiffle ball course, or a practice golf course, in that that space that we had. And so I got out my favorite piece of paper, which is graph paper, and proceeded to map out I don't remember if it was a 9-hole course or an 18-hole course. It was probably just 9, but I had sand traps, I had trees, I had water that I was going to put in. I had the whole works. And so after putting it on paper, I decided to go out and get some string and some stakes. And I proceeded to, I was out there one day mapping out the holes. And the assistant airport manager comes by and he goes, what in the world are you doing? And I told him. And he said, well, Joe, the manager, has told me that he wants to put in some shrubs and some bushes. And I went, ah, oh, sweet. I'll tell you exactly where I need them. Unfortunately, we never, or I never had the time to actually finish that. And I don't think they ever brought over any bushes or shrubs or trees for that area out in front of the tower. But that just goes to show what can happen when controllers have way too much time on their hands and not enough to do.
Hey there, future air traffic controllers. Are you feeling the pressure of the FAA Academy? Or are you about to head to the Academy? We've got something you can't do without. We have come up with our top 10 tips for success at the FAA Air Traffic Control Academy. That's right, 10 tips for success, and they are yours free. All you have to do is go to sidebysideatc.com/success and sign up to receive your free guide. Again, all you have to do is go to sidebysideatc.com/success, sign up with your email, and we will send you your free top 10 tips. Once you sign up, you'll be able to see our special free bonus as well. Are you ready for Academy success?
Okay, the next, oh man, next story. Unfortunately, I have been at two towers that had airplanes actually hit. The first one was at Dallas Love when a 737 with Southwest was taxiing in and a twin Cessna was taxiing out, and somehow they did not see each other, and the twin Cessna ended up hitting the 737. Fortunately, no sparks, no flames. Neither aircraft, I mean, the twin Cessna, its tip tank on the tip of its wing was crushed by the engine of the 737. And apparently nothing happened to the 737. It's probably a little damaged on the engine from the collision, but I don't remember that they even had to take the airplane out of commission for very long, but they did check it. The other incident happened recently, about 2 years ago, at an air show at the airport that I work at, and my wife was up in the tower cab watching the air show with me. When the air show was going on, we didn't have anything to do. We give the airspace to the air boss, and he's directing the traffic and all that. And we're up there in the tower basically just monitoring to make sure that no one gets into the airspace, and then coordinating anything that the air boss needs as far as anything extra altitude-wise for the show. And so we had gone through, you know, I got lots of video of the old warbirds flying around, the old fighters flying around, some of the trainers flying around. And like I said, my wife and I, we were out on the catwalk, and all of a sudden I hear something, a boom. And at the same time, my wife grabs my shoulder. And I turn to see a bomber and a fighter just go up in flames and crash at the airport. And there were other people out on the catwalk with us from the CAF, and one of them got fairly hysterical. Her boyfriend was one of the crew of a different bomber that was actually out at the runway very close to the incident that was waiting to take off. But of course they never did after that. And so my wife and I scrambled back into the tower. And about that time, the three guys that were still in the tower were realizing what was going on. And of course, airport management and the rescue units were all rolling by then. And then the guys in the tower were having to try and get everybody back to different airports because they couldn't come to ours and land, so they had to go somewhere else. And so there was a lot of activity, and my wife mentioned that they hit each other. And I got to tell you, I'd been a controller for 26 years at that point. I've been an instructor at the academy for 5 years. My air traffic controller brain would not process the two airplanes that actually hit. And so I was sure she must have seen it wrong. By the time I looked over and saw it, it looked like the bomber had exploded and the fighter had gotten caught up in it or something like that. But it wasn't long before, just a few minutes before, people started posting videos that they had taken, and sure enough, the fighter had flown into the bomber, and they had exploded, and of course no one survived it. So it's pretty traumatic to see something like that. It's it stays with you. I had nightmares for a few weeks after that. I've heard stories of guys that worked towers, and like the guy that worked, I think, the Delta crash at DFW years and years ago. I'm not sure he ever worked traffic again. And I never really truly understood that, because I hadn't had to deal with it. And after seeing what I saw, just as a bystander, not even working the airplanes, I understand now. I was able to talk to some friends that we lived nearby at the time, and he was an emergency room doctor. She was an emergency room nurse. And I just asked, how do you deal with seeing that? How do you deal with, it's one thing to see someone die live, even on TV. It's quite a different thing to actually watch it in person and to hear it and to, and see the aftermath of it. So that took a little bit of getting over. It took my wife a long time before she wanted to be anywhere near an airport. And unfortunately, where we live, we see lots of airplanes fly overhead on their way into Love Field or taking off of Love Field. And so she never really gets away from it. But, over the 2 years since, she is now where she's okay driving our daughters to the airport or going to the airport. She's flown on an airplane since then. She has even come back up into the tower. And this last 4th of July, she got to spend it up there in a tower with me, and we got to see fireworks from the vantage point of inside the tower, which is one of the huge benefits of being in a tower as opposed to being in the center. So, sorry to, kind of be a downer with that story, but like I said, working in a tower, there are different types of towers. The tower I'm at now, we have a lot of what we call local traffic, a lot of pattern traffic, a lot of touch and goes, not as many IFR traffic, not as much IFR traffic. Whereas when I was at Love, tower, it was all IFR traffic, most of it. And to this day, they have, you know, a ton of IFR traffic landing and departing from that airport. And they have quite a few helicopters that they work in their airspace as well. When I was there, it was traffic watch helicopters, and now it's air ambulances, care flights. They've got, I think, four major hospitals within 3 miles of the airport. And so they work a lot of helicopter traffic. We've got, the police have their helicopter stationed at our airport, so we have a lot of, we work with them quite a bit. You know, it's just different being in a small airport, again, than being at a larger airport. In a larger airport, you're constantly talking, constantly clearing people for takeoff, clearing people to land, constantly crossing runways with airplanes. I mean, it is a just constant grind. Whereas at smaller airport, you know, you can be busy with people in your pattern. You can have four or five. I've had probably six or eight airplanes in the pattern. Then you get other airplanes that are coming in or other airplanes that are departing. You're having people do 360s. You got people flying all over your airspace. And it is quite the juggling act at a smaller airport. At a larger airport, it's much more standardized. It's, you know, you're doing the same thing a lot. A smaller airport, you can have everything set up and you have a student pilot who turns left instead of right, who doesn't turn their base when you need them to turn their base because you've got people behind them and in front of them. And, you know, so you're constantly having to redo your plan. You know, that's just part of being in a tower. I can't tell you how many times I've had people, you know, come in. We have people that come in with their gear up. We had a guy just a week or so ago land with his gear up. I couldn't get him down, and then started having other issues with the airplane, so he had to land. He couldn't just fly around. I actually had a friend of mine come in, couldn't get his gear down. His gear wouldn't come down. And so he flew by. We checked just to make sure, and sure enough, he did not have any gear down. So he went out a little bit and worked. He had a couple of levers that he could pull to manually get his gear down. And he was able to get it down. He was able to land safely. And I must admit, I texted him and said, hey, don't do that to me again. It's one thing when you don't know people on an airplane, but when you do know people on an airplane, that's totally different. And so I've actually had people in my pattern in a Piper Seminole forget to put their gear down. And fortunately, and I was busy. I had six or seven guys in the pattern. And I happened to look out on short final, and the guy doesn't have his gear on. And so I said, okay, go around. You know, gear appears up. I had to do that just a couple of weeks ago with a Seminole. He gets on like a quarter mile final, and I just keyed up and said, you know, check gear. Gear appears up. And right as I'm telling him, here comes the gear down. They did end up going around, but it was more, the instructor said it was more him trying to prove a point to his student than that they needed to go around. But so those are things that can happen. You know, the tower is a much smaller group of people than a center is. You know, you're talking 30 to 60 in a large tower. We've got 5 in the tower where I am. So it's a much smaller group. You know everybody. So I came in at midnight. It was one of those where they had some weather either around the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex or somewhere else, and there was a southwest coming in late. And, it was about 11:45, 12 o'clock. When I cleared him to land, he lands, and he taxis to parking. No problem, I thought. And I get a call about 30 minutes later, and the guy says, "My name is so-and-so. I'm the captain of Southwest flight," whichever it was. And we actually veered off the runway. And I went, "Excuse me?" He said, "Yeah, we were doing our post-flight check, and we found a lot of mud and debris on the underside of the airplane, so we went off into the dirt." And I'm like, "Really? Okay." So it meant that I had to make some calls and wake some people up in the middle of the night. And then the next morning, the airport went out and inspected, and he said, sure enough, there was a nice big rut about, I think he said 2 or 3 yards off the runway. And I'm like, how did he not have something worse happen to him than just taxiing to park? So, strange things happen in the tower. Strange things happen in the center, too. When you get people flying around in airplanes that technically probably shouldn't be up in the air, shouldn't be able to fly, strange things happen. But it is a joy to work in a tower. It's a joy to work as an air traffic controller. And so maybe, you know, some of these stories will light a fire under you and make you want to be a controller. I would love that to happen. I would love to be a part of one of you deciding that you're going to be an air traffic controller. So I'll go ahead and end it with that. I want to thank everyone again for listening to these podcasts. We feel very fortunate to be doing this, and like I've kind of hinted at before, we have some things that are in the pipeline, and that we are just oh so close to getting finalized and getting out there for you guys. It's going to be mainly for students who are at the academy and students who are thinking about going to the academy. But like I said in the ad earlier, you can get our top 10 tips to succeed at the FAA Air Traffic Control Academy by going to sidebysideatc.com/success. That's SUCCESS. And I hope you go there. I hope you get it, download it, and I hope it helps you. And like I said, there's an extra free surprise. We'll just call it a surprise. That if you do sign up and get the free guide, that there'll be something extra in there that might even be worth more than the guide. I'll just leave it at that. But thank you so much again for listening. Thank you for continuing to listen to these podcasts. I enjoy doing them, and I hope you enjoy listening. And until next time, Have a good day. Have a good night whenever you're listening to this. And have a great, great day. Thank you very much. Bye.